that in no way seemed likely to fit together on the shelves. He was not happy to be there. "Why don't you get Callie to do this?" Annalene looked sternly down the aisle from her counter. "Callie has her own job and you know it. This stuff's feed. Animals are her department." "That's outside the store. This is inside the store. You want me to play back a recording from the last 10 times we've had this conversation?" Annalene spotted Oren's approach. "You better not be here for a piece of this." Oren plucked his good cape from the rack by the door and smirked. "No, Annie. I know when I'm beat." He looked down at Jabe. "Sorry, kid. Maybe next career." Seeing Jabe's shoulders droop, Oren winked to reassure him. The boy had to know he had an advocate in him. It was just a matter of time. Oren tied the cape around his neck as he made his way around the castle of feed sacks. "How's Callie today?" Annalene rolled her eyes. "You'll have to ask her when she lands." She pointed down the counter to the luncheonette. There, Callie, recovered from her ordeal several days earlier, was in the midst of retelling the story of her rescue, this time to some teenage friends in from the fields. "And he just appeared, like he rode down out of the sky. And there were sarlaccs everywhere, but he plowed straight through to try to catch up with me." Oren had heard this one twice in the past 2 days. He raised an eyebrow to Annalene. "Sarlaccs everywhere?" "Today, yes." Annalene looked up from scrubbing the counter. "Wait a while. She's added a giant cliff."
"I'm not hearing her mention your role in things," Oren said.
"Oh, I wasn't there," Annalene said, a wry twist to her mouth. "I haven't been in the story for a long time. Of course, I'm a great writer and I could have handled it. But Ben's the type of guy who can't look the other way when he sees a woman in trouble. And he knew he had to save me from certain..."
"When do I meet this deity?" Oren said.
"No idea." Annalene scraped at a stain with frustration. "You know these drifters out in the wastes. He's probably gotten lost and eaten his Eopi by now." Oren chuckled. This response was pure, Annie, but he could tell she was disappointed their rescuer hadn't paid a call. Oren was glad she'd found help out there. Since she'd left without her communicator, they would have had no way to find her. But the man's absence was probably just as well. Kindly nomads had a way of moving in once they knew you owed them something. The talk had spread to another table, he heard, as Lily and the older locals tried to identify the Ben in question. "There's that Ben Gadink, who sells the sand sculptures out of the back of his repulsor truck," Lily said.
"You're thinking Ben Moordriver," corrected Doc Mel. "Ben Gadink runs the apothecary in Bastine."
"Maybe Ben Crissel, the card cheat,"
a young farmer said.
"Ben Syrup," proclaimed an old one. "No, wait, he's an Ithorian."
In under 2 minutes, they had expanded the list of local Bens to double digits and completely exhausted Oren's interest. He stepped to the counter and found his lunchbox and fresh canteen in their usual place. Annalene noticed his cape. "Going somewhere?" "Subscription drive again." "Again? I thought the Settlers' Fund met the annual goal weeks ago." "Well, safety's something you can never have enough of," he said. "And the response to the Bizarre raid shows the call's working as it's supposed to." Annalene lowered her voice. "Not counting a couple of dead people." The Bizarre husband had moved back home, but Tyla and the baby were still in her guest quarters. "I can't believe there's anyone left around here to sign up."
"You know the main holdouts," he said. "But I think we can start offering protection to farms a little farther away."
"They'll be able to disband the militia in Mos Eisley before you know it," Annalene said, stepping out from behind the counter with an armload of batteries. "Good luck, champ." Oren clicked his tongue happily and turned toward the door to the garage. That meant walking past Jave and Mount Feed. The boy was as sad as Orin had ever seen him. "I'm never going to get back on the range with you guys." Jabe looked up at Orin forlornly. "You might be able to help us out in other ways," Orin said. "And give her a week. She'll have forgotten all about the other day." "She should have kept Tar around," Jabe said. Annalene's voice sounded from over the shelves in the next aisle. "Tar wouldn't have stayed, and you know it. Your family. This is a family business." Orin smirked. "Better learn now, boy. Woman knows all, hears all." But he happened to agree. Tar Lup was a hairy-faced Shistavanan that Danar had brought in to clerk when Annalene's pregnancy with Jabe turned difficult. Amiable and ambitious, Tar had left for big city retail, where he was doing well. Orin had prevailed upon him to return to help out for a few months after Danar's death, which he did gladly. You could take someone out of the oasis, Orin liked to say, but that sense of community was always there. But Tar wasn't likely to come back as a stalker, and they all knew it. Jabe shook his head sadly and returned to his chore. Walking back to the garage, Orin found his children huddled over the back of a repulsor truck, poring over the goods inside. "That's the stuff?"
"Yep,"
Mullen said, moving aside to let Orin approach.
"It's the last batch of Tuscan junk from the Bizarre Raid."
Orin looked into the back of the vehicle. A couple of bandoliers, another gaffy stick, some putrid-smelling pouches. The Tuscans never had anything they didn't steal from someone else. But it was interesting to try to see the world through their eyes. "No clothes?" Mullen snorted.
"You want to strip those stinking things down?"
"Not hardly." It was an experience you didn't repeat. Whatever the Tuscans were born as, a lifetime in the suns, under wraps, turned them into something frightful. They smelled frightful anyway. Pulling a spanner from the folds of his cloak, he used it to gently lift a pair of goggles. Tuscan eyewear was strange. Some wore normal goggles, sheathed in wrapping. Others wore independent eyepieces, tightly rooted in their masks, but all terminated in the same nonsensical turrets. Whatever shielding the dull metal tubes provided to Tuscan eyes against the suns couldn't have been worth the peripheral vision they took away. And if there was a way to use the lens inside to see farther,